The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, it's Billy Morrison and Ozzy Osbourne here. Our new show, The Madhouse Chronicles, is dropping this April. Join us as we watch and react to the maddest internet clips. What do we discuss, Ozzy?
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, all that kind of shit.
Drugs, rock and roll, aliens, and all that kinds of shit. Visit osbournemediahouse.com for early access. What do you say? Do you think it's the wildest show on the internet?
Oh.
You're in the madhouse now.
Hi, this is Christopher Lewis, and welcome to Dating Intelligence, the podcast where we give relationship advice from dating to marriage and everything else in between, and always with the goal of helping you to continuously be the best you at all times.
So if you're looking for real, honest information to help you navigate your relationships, we've got you covered.
We've got you covered. All you see is a
I was waiting for you. I was like, where's my note?
Hi, guys. Welcome to another day with us, Jamie Villamore and Christopher Lewis, and another day at Sticky Paw Studios. And hi. Hi,
I knew I should have locked your ass out of my car when I picked you up today.
Guys, Jamie said when she picked me up today, I was waiting for her, and she goes, what pole are you on? I said, I'm at the stripper pole. She goes, what number five? So when I get there, she said when I was pulling the door open, she was going to lock me off and drive off.
I was like, every pole in Vegas is a stripper pole. Don't fucking touch it and keep your hands to yourself.
Oh my God. I just brought some grease and just greased it up the next time. So, all right, guys. Like I said, we're here. Hello, hello. Yeah. We got another great episode today. And hi, Villamore. What's up?
Man, I'm fucking tired today.
I know you are. You went shooting yesterday.
I was on the range all day.
What's this whirlwind you've been on? I've been seeing this on social media.
So I was invited to hang out at Tailfest this weekend. So it was amazing. A ton of very talented artists. So it was really fun. I ran into Michelle Rodriguez.
Oh, nice.
Who I'm a huge fan
of. Yeah, that's great. She's amazing.
Good conversations with her. And yeah, she's a total badass.
Yeah, she is. Yeah. How is she in like... big presence when you saw her?
Big personality. Yeah, just such a freaking lover, though.
Okay.
She's a really cool person. I bet our guest has probably had maybe some interactions with her. I don't know.
Oh, well, let's take a look and see. Yeah. All right, guys, we are going to get into this one today. So our guest today is an actor and a technical advisor who has literally done his field work for his role on the hit show SEAL Team. This former Army Ranger and Delta Force operator is a true American hero who has served time in Afghanistan and now serves up one-liners on screen to TV viewers. Please welcome and thank you for your service, Tyler Gray.
Thank you.
What's up, Tyler?
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Good to have you, man. Yeah, for sure.
No, it's great to be here.
I've been trying to get you on this show for like months.
Yeah, I was just saying that. I think it's probably been 3 months-ish. Yeah.
It has been because I've had my intro waiting for you all this time. So it's been a while.
Yeah, but you know, the filming schedule, it doesn't never changes to accommodate you. So
I'm sure.
It's just really difficult. But this worked out finally.
Good.
So very happy about that.
Great. Well, we're glad to have you. And the show's going great. Apparently, it's going really well. I've been researching and looking it up. So
yeah, we're filming season 6
Amazing.
Right now. Almost done. And then we're going to do a movie. I have no idea the timeline on it, but that's the next. We know that's happening. So it's been, you know, 6 seasons at this point in kind of, you know, the Hollywood entertainment streaming world is pretty rare. So it's been an amazing run and just great experience.
Yeah, guys, you got to check this one out. I mean, you have like a real expert here who literally has been in Afghanistan. And how many years in the service, by the way, for you?
It was 9 by the time I got out.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was medically retired from, I got hurt in Iraq and I got medically retired. And then the two things I wanted to do as a kid was specifically be in the Army. I was, you know, I watched, you know, Rambo a million times.
Love that movie.
Being in the military was just something I always wanted. And, you know, I was a weird kid. I would watch Rambo and be like, you know, he had PTSD. And I'm like, oh, that looks cool. I want that. I mean, it's such a messed up mentality. But, like, you know, I was like, he's so fucked up. I love it.
Right.
And the other thing I want to do, and obviously this kind of goes along with Rambo, is I just... movies and the military were the two things that I loved. So when the first career ended, I, you know, went to Hollywood and, you know, tried to work, you know, which is a process of meeting people.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it takes a long time, but it finally, you know, about 5 years in, I was able to start, you know, working full time doing entertainment. So, it's been really great.
Okay. Well, with your background now, did you feel like when you started in the acting realm, and we'll get back to the Army and your service and all that stuff, but in the acting world, did you feel like you were not that they're pigeonholing you in like certain roles, but did you want to be like how right now you're in the SEAL team and you're being like an advisor on this, I'm sure 100%. Did you feel like you did more advising at the beginning of your career, or were you just jumping right in the acting? And
No, I definitely, you know, when I started, I mean, I've never went to, you know, I never went to acting school. Mm-hmm. I did do drama in high school, but you know, whatever. It was really to meet girls, but
smart man.
Yeah, which let me tell you, it's a great place. But so I started advising. That was the first thing, and I did a couple projects, and then I did a movie where a friend of mine went on as an actor, and he did like a week, and I did I think 3 months advising, and he made more money than me.
Oh, yeah, it's crazy.
And I'm like, so. On a film or TV, it doesn't matter. The only people not in a union are if you're any kind of technical advisor, if you're advising doctors on ER or okay. You know, whatever it is, you're not in a union, and neither is the PAs. So because everyone else is in a union, those that aren't get screwed.
Right.
Why? Because they can, you know. Yeah. So actually that project that I did, I actually had to say a line, cause I was doing stuff on camera, and then that got me into SAG. And then after that, every movie or whatever project I was doing, I just said, hey, I'll advise, but put me on camera. So I was under a SAG contract.
Oh, great.
Making a lot more money. And also being protected, like with, you know, as an advisor, I could work 16 hours and I was getting paid for 8.
Yeah.
You know, once I was on the SAG contract, I was getting paid for, you know, the
double time, golden time.
Yeah. And it gets, so that's how I started. And then, you know, I had no idea what I was doing. And just the more I was on camera, I just, you know, kind of figured it out. So I never had an intent to be an actor.
Okay.
But then my real passion is directing. So I've directed 3 episodes of SEAL Team, and I love that. But being on camera, you learn so much about storytelling and how to direct actors, because I know what people tell me, and I'm like, they've never been on camera, because that doesn't make any sense. It's like when a director tells you, because, you know, hey, I'm eating in this scene. Do you want that line delivered, you know, before I move the fork? You know, literally, yeah, right. Like, cause it's,
out of it matters. And stuff,
yeah. It matters. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, just act natural. And I'm like, you've obviously never been on camera, because there is literally nothing natural about about being on camera. It is, it couldn't be more artificial, you
right.
know? And then you have to match that every take from every different angle. So it's like, there is no act natural, but, so I've learned a lot, and, you know, now I actually really really enjoy acting. It's, you know, I love storytelling, and you know, you can, a big aspect of storytelling is the actor's performance.
Yep.
And how they choose to convey their character's, you know, story. So, yeah, I really like it now, and I've, you know, been on camera for 102 episodes, whatever we're on now. And, you know, I've been around all these great actors, you know, you had David Boreanaz, you know, I mean, yep. he's been literally on TV continuously for, I think, 25 years now.
He was don't tell me. He was on the Vampire with Buffy. He yep. was what was his name? Oh God.
He was on Angel.
Angel, thank well, you very much. I was a big Angel fan.
Sorry, yeah. he was on Buffy, then he was on Angel, mm-hmm. then he went to Bones for 11
right.
seasons,
yep. mm-hmm.
and then he went straight to this. So
this guy has an illustrious
wow.
career.
Oh, he's
oh my God.
He's been I don't know how he's done it because it's not an easy schedule. But so you know, the other, you know, Max Terriot, AJ Buckley and Neil Brown Jr., all these really good actors. And I just learned from watching how they did things.
That's
and I
great.
Would ask them questions. And, you know, now I really enjoy it. So it's, but it wasn't something that I expected.
Of course. Wow.
Did it come natural for you, or did it require a lot of work on your end?
So that's kind of funny. So when I first started doing, you know, dialogue, I just delivered it. I don't care about being on camera. I'm not uncomfortable at all. And I also didn't really, like, being an actor wasn't my thing. So I didn't really give a shit. So I just delivered, you know.
Whatever line was there.
Yeah. I would just deliver it as me, you know. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. And I thought that was pretty easy, really, for me, just because
right.
I don't, you know, the camera doesn't, it's never bothered me. And so that was like season one and two. And then I started getting more like acting lines that required like comedy for me. So easy. But, you know, the more dramatic stuff, I was like, at the end of season two, I was like, I should probably know what I'm doing. So I went to this acting class and I went like two times and I was there and I was like, this is not how this works. You know, what the class was, I'm like, you can't do that before seeing. There's not enough, you know, like I'm like,
right.
I'm like, they're teaching them these things, but you can't do it that way. You don't have the time. You like you deliver when they say, and you can't mess up anything. I was just so I stopped doing that class, and then I just really started asking the other actors. And what I figured out, and then I tried season three. I was like acting,
okay,
you know, and that was like not good. It was better to be natural because I was like trying to put some performance in it. And then finally, season four, I realized what the secret is, which is, you know, be you, be 80% you, and just 20%, you know, put nowhere to put the performance in the dialogue.
Okay.
So I say, you know, put some stank on it. Like, right. There's certain, most lines are not that important. Like, if I'm delivering a line like this and I'm just talking, but there is one thing. That's the important part. That's it. Everything else is thrown away.
Got it.
But when I go, but that one thing, that's important.
Okay.
You know, so everything, you just have to know where, you know, where to act, where to put the performance into it. And
but also right now, I mean, because it's your character now. I mean, you've developed this character from season one
yeah.
in theory, and now it's season four, five, and six, which you're going into.
Yeah.
This is you now. So it's like whatever stink you put on it, it's gonna be who you are that they see you now.
That you've created.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. And the other thing too is it's, you know, you're not in a real environment. So it's never really you, you know, you're saying things that writers wrote. So it's not what I would say.
Yeah.
So you don't have to change it that much or you don't have to, you know, the character is, yeah, it's me delivering the lines, but it's still not what I would say. So it's different than me, you know? And it's been amazing. I've really enjoyed it and I've learned a lot and, I love telling stories, and specifically with this show, I'll end with this. You know, what I love about the show and what makes me proud about it is, look, is it cool on a movie or TV show, does it look cool to, you know, fast rope onto buildings and, you know, ride in helicopters outside the helicopter? Does that stuff look cool? Yes, it absolutely does. Does it look cool to climb up a ship and assault the ship? All that stuff looks cool, and it is. But where I think the show really is important is that what the show is really about, I mean, that's the gloss on it, mm-hmm. that's the action, but the show's really about all the characters, how their lives basically get demolished, like that's the word I'm looking for, the destruction that job does to their lives over time.
Right.
That's what the show is really about. And that's a very honest portrayal of that job and of that community and the military in general. So I feel like, yeah, we have some recruiting video type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, we're very honest that, hey, yeah, the job's cool. It's fun in a lot of ways, but it does come at a cost.
Okay.
And I'm very proud that we're able to put out that authentic portrayal of that life. Like, hey, you can do it, but this is what it is.
Okay.
You know, and I like that.
Do you feel like because of your history and career in the armed services and then doing this, I don't want to say overlap, but do you feel like you have some things in there because you are advising as well, and I'm sure it's probably that's the fun stuff for you and everything, recreation and all that, especially now as you're directing. When you leave, do you have to sometimes take a beat and go, take a deep breath?
You know, it's weird. I get asked that question a lot, mm-hmm. and it never feels similar.
Okay.
You know,
right.
You know, like when I can be in an action scene and, you know, we're getting shot at and explosions are going off. And then I look behind the camera and there's, you know, a dude walking around passing out sushi. So it's easy to not get too, you know, caught up in that. And every once in a while, there was one time where I was walking towards a helicopter. We had a Black Hawk, and I was walking towards it and I smelled the exhaust fumes, and that was like a, you know, not fucking Vietnam, you know, flashback, but it definitely like was surreal.
Gotcha.
And there's been a couple times like that, but it's never in the moments like of, it's never in, you know, in the moments of peril in the show when we're getting shot at or blown up or whatever. It's in the moments where it's calm and, you know, I'll be riding on a helicopter and it just kind of, you know, takes me back. But the best thing, what's weird about the show is, you know, I got medically retired, obviously, and when I got blown up, like it literally, I didn't know it was coming, obviously, and I didn't know, my career was about to end, and it, boom, was over in a millisecond. So this for me has also been therapeutic in that I get to go play, you know, I get to go play soldier again, or sailor, technically. but it's...
And come out unscathed in theory, yeah, right? Right.
It's fun. I mean, mm-hmm. it is actually harder to... it's a lot more exhausting than I thought it would be. You know, when I went into it, I was like, you know, it's going to be easy compared to the, you know, being in the military. And, you know, when you're wearing kit and doing the same action sequence for 12, 13, 14 hours, it's definitely exhausting. But, you know, getting to ride on helicopters and do all that stuff again is really kind of gave me the closure that I was missing from the military.
That's Let's great. Talk a little bit about your accident. Do you want to talk a little bit about that? Yeah. Let's see your arm.
Oh, yeah. So
it's crazy.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Yeah, it's okay.
So it, you know, I mean, it was a pretty, that was about a 5-year process of surgery, rehab, you know, surgery, rehab, you know, or therapy, you know, heal up a little bit, then another surgery. And then I did that cycle for about 5 years.
Wow.
And I was on, you know, a shit ton of opiates for that whole time because, you know, like that's, you know, legitimately, because after every surgery, I'd have to, you know, I'd get on it and then I'd get off and then I'd have to get back on and get off. And yeah, it was really, it was a difficult 5 years. And now though, it's funny because, and actually this will come up later when we're talking about dating stuff, but all the, you know, the worst thing that's ever happened to me at one time.
Right.
I look back 10 years later and I'm like, that was the best thing that ever happened to me.
Okay.
Like this
wow.
best thing that ever happened to me. Because I am pretty confident. I don't think I wouldn't have got out. I would have stayed in for 20 years.
I was going to ask you that.
I absolutely would have. And B, just because I didn't know how long the wars would continue too. And I wouldn't have left until they did, which I would have been in 20 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Because they were still going
yeah.
on
yeah.
even after 20 years. So, and I think I was dumb. You know, I was young and
well, you're Rambo. I mean, like I said.
I'm fundamentally, and I'm totally serious mm-hmm. when I say this, you know, just kind of like the joke about, you know, Rambo and like, oh, PTSD, that looks, I want that, you know. I'm a fundamentally self-destructive person.
Okay.
I have a fundamental basis of self-destruction. And my theory is that the kind of that warrior mentality, it's fundamentally self-destruction.
Yeah.
And do you feel like you operate in a space of high risk? That's excitement to you.
Yes, absolutely. I have to, you know, people can say heroin's the most addictive drug. I think it's adrenaline,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I live life to risk it. You know, I ride motorcycles. As you know, I got in a motorcycle. I got hit by a car a year and a half
Which
ago.
Toe did that
I didn't see him get hit by the car, yeah. but
yeah,
but I did shoot guns with him.
Okay.
Yeah.
And very impressed.
I'm
so
sure.
Initially you were right-handed, correct?
Yeah. Yep.
So now he shoots left.
Oh, incredible.
So
left-handed and that fundamental self-destruction too. Yes, it's definitely chasing adrenaline. It's chasing like I live life to risk it. That's how I feel. But I think on a bigger, you know, I've heard, you know, I've had this conversation and people are like, I don't know if that warrior kind of mentality ethos is self-destructive. And I go, well, think of it this way. 1,000 years ago, a bunch of dudes charged each other in an open field with swords and axes.
Yeah.
If that's not self-destructive, I don't know what is. You know what I mean?
And yeah.
Like it's.
Does that excite you when you think of that, though?
Weirdly, yeah.
It excites me. Does it excite you, Chris?
I mean, I'm just sorry. I was looking at the other. Hello, I'm a cush boy here, okay? I like my cush, I like my love.
Yeah.
No, I like my adrenaline, I have my fun, but this is a whole nother level that he's talking about.
Yeah.
It's that thing where you just said about 1,000 years ago, like, it was just like, you know, you charge and you just go
fucking,
for it. But then
you're all
there's
in.
Like probably 80% of those guys are full on. The rest of the 20 are like, why the fuck am I running towards this? And it's like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Everyone's got their different things. But I, you know, and the point that I was making, because I've talked to a lot of people about this, is the job by definition is self-destructive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's nothing, you know, running towards gunfire. That's destructive, you know? So I think there has to be a fundamental mentality of self-destructiveness to do that job. And then what's interesting is once that job ends, whether you, you know, get hurt and get out, whether you just get out, whether you retire, it doesn't matter. You're still that same person. And it's shocking to me that people don't see that, dude, the job was self-destructive. So is it really that surprising that when you get out, you're still self-destructive?
Right.
Mm-mm.
No, that's who you are.
Yeah.
You know, and so for me now, it's about taking that fundamental self-destructiveness and just channeling it into positive, less self-destructive things.
Okay.
So, and for me, the entertainment industry is so chaotic, and it comes at a cost. Like, you know, the reason so many actors have issues is it's a destructive lifestyle. And it fits me perfectly.
What makes it self-destructive or a destructive industry, in your opinion?
So I'll say this for actors specifically, you know, the mechanism of production and filming, nobody cares. Nobody cares. Like, look at Robert Downey Jr. Look at all the drug problems with actors. The reason is because you are expected to deliver an extremely high energy every scene all day for 12 hours. That's not sustainable. So it's, you know, Hayden Panettiere, I think her actually bodyguarded her, which I have a really funny story about. But, you know, she was given Adderall as a kid, you know, and I think, I forget what they called it, but like, happy pills. They called it happy pills. So she could do interviews and things like that. And, you know, she was up to a lot. And again, did they know what was going on? Of course they did, but they don't care. As long as she comes in and delivers, no one cares. So they absolutely, that industry does and has always reinforced, you know, destructive behavior, because it's kind of required to, you know, you're kind of sacrificing your health and time and mental health to do that job.
Right.
You know,
and let's just, like, you've just touched upon something we can just add onto that layer. It's the same, like, I can just say as much as the sports industry, there's lots of different issues, because it's like, you're basically at this point, just like you said, you're just a small part of the overall big picture, like you said, especially in the acting industry and in that world, because, you know, like you said, you're required to be on set for so many hours. You're required to learn your lines. Like you said, to be at the highest level, to do your best performance all the time. And just like in sports, the same way. Probably some of these high profile jobs. I mean, obviously the military service, when you're really in, it's somewhat similar. I don't know how much sleep you actually get in those sense of the words and those when you're really in it as well. So these are grueling jobs, man. And so something's got to give, and it's usually your psyche at that point, I feel like.
And you know, again, the process of just, you know, like if you look into the military, like they give amphetamines to pilots. They give amphetamines to soldiers, because how else are you going to do an 18-hour mission at night, you know, when you've had 3 hours of sleep? And it's, again, it's not, you know, the entire German military in World War II was, the Blitzkrieg was based on methamphetamine.
Yep.
You know, they gave
I didn't know that.
They gave them meth straight up. It was called Pervitin. And the entire German army was on meth, literally.
Yeah.
Which also makes you fearless, by the way. So, you know, that's why the German soldiers were just doing crazy shit. They were, you know, they were methed out, you know, but, it's been around for a long time on, you know, the, and again, separate from the military, but just the powers that be, you know, whatever the, you know, people that they need to get the product they want, give them whatever they want.
I was about to say, there's no means to an end when just like you have to literally, like, anything, like I said, military, that situation, acting, if someone at the top is getting what they need out of all of these things to make it work and getting paid or whatever it is, power, whatever, they will do whatever it takes to keep the wheels going.
Right. So tips or tricks for anyone that has like PTSD, like what worked for you?
Oh, great question. That's a great question. So I'll say this. So PTSD, referring to PTSD specifically, you know, PTSD, the problem I have with that term or that diagnosis is that PTSD is not even remotely specific to combat veterans, nor is it specific to the military. It is a very broad term that a person legitimately can have PTSD from car accident. Mm-hmm. You know, you could be, you know, slapped as a kid and have PTSD from that. Your mom, you know, ripped on your hair your whole life. So you, you know, freak out when something happens with your hair. I mean,
right.
Those are all, you know, possible clinical examples of actual PTSD. So the problem I have is when you get diagnosed with PTSD, what does it really mean? If that phrase or that diagnosis encapsulates like this much, it's so non-specific that it really, to me, it doesn't mean anything because it's so broad, it encompasses so much. How do you go about, you know, fixing that?
Right.
And there's a lot of therapies and all those different things, but for the military and for combat veterans specifically, you know, I think it's a lot more complicated than just saying PTSD. You know, me, I made up a term for myself. I don't know if this applies to, you know, it'll apply to some, it won't apply to others. I don't have PTSD. I figured that out. Like they were telling me you have PTSD, you have PTSD. And I'm like, okay, well, what is that? What does that mean? It's this, this, this. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't have any of those things. I'm definitely fucked up. Mm-hmm. No question.
Right, right.
But I don't have those things. And they're like, oh, no, you do. You know, denial is one of the definitive signs of it. And, you know, all these, you know, smart, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists, all these things, and therapists. And I just went, and they keep telling me what it is. And, you know, I finally said to one of the psychologists, I just said, look, you know what you know about PTSD from college. You're telling me what it's supposed to be, and I'm telling you what it is. Like, I'm telling you how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not fitting in with what you're saying. So I basically decided, screw it. I'm going to figure it out myself. And I came up with, and there was a whole thing that happened that made me come up with this, but I have what I call LTSD. I don't have post-traumatic stress syndrome. I have lack of traumatic stress syndrome. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you're a good, you know, member of a normal first world society,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you work well and fit well in America, you should suck in a war zone because it is the 180 degree opposite of regular society. You should suck. Once you get to the point where you're good in that combat environment and you can deal with it and you can handle it and you can operate in it, you've been reverse wired. And now you should suck in society.
Mm-hmm.
Once you're changed to this, you shouldn't be able to, you can't bounce back and forth. And we act like you can, but
right.
you can't because you've been reverse wired. Okay. So for me, as an example, LTSD is I am now calm in chaos. If the environment is absolutely level 10 chaotic, I'm chill as a cucumber because that's what you have to be in a combat environment.
Yeah. Right.
CQB, fighting within a house, it's crazy. So I'm calm in chaos. If the environment is calm, that chaos is in my brain. I can't
What's
handle
your outlet?
Yeah. I can't handle calm.
Right.
I need that chaos to be comfortable. So what do? I create chaos.
Okay.
I, you know, drink, I ride a motorcycle 120 miles an hour, I get into relationships that I know are gonna be painful because I need chaos. And oh, that girl looks chaotic. Sold. I'm in, right? and that's, you know, and that's what I need. I've been reverse wired, and so I have to create that chaos. And as soon as I create it, I'm calm again.
Okay. Wow.
And so that's I need traumatic stress to feel calm.
Is there
are you still in that space?
Yes. But I now, because I figured it out, I now know how to create healthy chaos.
Okay.
Like, so for me, being on set, it's fucking chaotic, especially when you're, you know, directing and producing and acting. Mm-hmm. Like, it's chaos.
I'm sure.
So that chaos of the environment, like, I love, you know, working on the show because it's chaos. So I'm good at it, and it fills that need. It's healthy chaos, and I just have to be aware, you know, outside of that too. Sometimes, yeah, I'll start to feel myself creating that chaos, you know, in a negative, bad way, and I'm like, all right, this is why you're doing it, and you know, once you know the why, it's much easier to change it. But I think, you know, my LTSD thing, and you also got to understand, like, there's a whole thing about brain chemistry. Like, you know, when I got out of the military, you know, I got the injury and I got out of the military, and I was just like, you know, I'm normally so resilient. And I was like, but I'm just disproportionately emotional, and I could just tell my brain wasn't normal. So I went and got an entire, like, hormone blood test, everything. And like, my testosterone was like 7. I'm like, well, shit, you know?
Yeah.
Because I couldn't work out for 5 years. And, you know, I went from here to here, and I was like, well, that's not good.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, well, that's why I'm being emotional. And it's just one of those things where, for whatever reason, especially in the US, no one takes an integrated approach. It's like, you have PTSD, go to mental therapy, but don't worry about, like, your hormones. That has nothing to do with anything. Bullshit.
Right.
Like, you know, happiness is literally a chemical. It's called fucking serotonin.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, serotonin, norepinephrine, or, you know, all those things. It's like, it's literally chemicals. If you don't deal with the chemical, especially talking about TBI, and how TBI affects your brain's production, mm-hmm, of chemicals. It's like, you got to do everything. You got to do everything at once. You can't just do therapy or this.
Right.
It's an integrated approach. And to my knowledge, I've never seen any place that takes a fully integrated approach to, I don't think you can work on mental health without also working on physical health, without also working on spiritual health. It all goes together.
It's all right. Right.
Yeah.
Have you ever looked into or experimented with plant medicine, like ayahuasca?
So Mape. Funny you say that. So I've been wanting to do ayahuasca for probably 3 years now.
Okay.
And just with the show, the timing hasn't worked out.
Mm-hmm.
I have dozens and dozens of friends who have done it, and I've never heard anyone say it was anything but amazing.
Right.
My buddy has a nonprofit that takes veterans on experiences, and
right,
it's combinates, you know, sometimes it's ayahuasca, ibogaine, psilocybin, you know, he's got, yeah, a whole kind of system, and everyone that I know that's done it says life-changing. So I'm definitely going to do it. I haven't yet, but, just waiting for the right time.
I would love to introduce you.
Yeah, no, I've heard nothing but great things. And, it's, you know, I think we're just now starting to open the door into experiences that actually not only, you know, what do you get from a therapist? You talk to them,
mm-hmm,
and they give you some feedback, but all change happens from within. All realization happens from within. And, you know, obviously with ayahuasca, you're making your own realizations. Mm-hmm. And that's why that stuff sticks, is because, right, it's not just therapy. It's you going within yourself. And I think that we're really on the edge of truly, and you're also talking about potentially with like psilocybin and things, changing the structure of the brain.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, healing the brain. And I personally think that healing the brain is the real, I think that's the real approach that needs to be taken with like PTSD and these things, mm-hmm, because it's ultimately, it's a brain issue. It's a chemical issue. It's you know what I mean? It's it's you know.
I think it also like encompasses a lot of healing for that trauma, like purging and just releasing, sitting with yourself, being still.
Yeah.
Just so much to take in and learn. And
it is, but I also like from both what you're saying, I feel like you have to, like you're talking about society and things like that, you have to be able to be in tune with yourself from the beginning. And even like there's some questions I wanted to ask about with your arm and just going in the military, and like you could call it LTSD and then things like that. It's like you already, just talking to you and listening to you about this, you already have had a center. You know, whether it be center to the way left or to the way right or dead center, you already had know yourself enough to know that you already, you need chaos, you need this, you need that. That's already you in tune with yourself. I don't care if it's the best way or the right way or the wrong way. You already had a sense of who you are. And now where you're at right now, the one I was going to ask you about the arm, just listening to you, you seem pretty damn good and okay.
You are 10 steps ahead of a lot of other people.
And it's pretty amazing,
actually.
Well, I didn't know who I was. I basically had to figure it out.
Right.
And no one's going to tell you. I don't care what therapist you have. The only way to know who you are is to do the work yourself.
Right.
And figure it out.
But that's right. What I mean by that. Yeah. Because like I said, from the start of this whole conversation, you know, when we were laughing about the whole Rambo thing, you already had a plan of what you wanted for yourself in theory. You know what I mean? And you've taken that plan and you've blossomed it into the second part of your career. That's what I'm getting at. And in order to do that, no matter how much chaos you had, you still stuck to your plan. You know, like you still look, you're directing, you're acting. All these things have blossomed because you still, no matter what happened, you still had a plan of what you, Tyler, wanted in your life. And that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
So your brain chemistry already at this point, no matter what's going on in there, you already had, you're centered enough with a plan. And that's the start. You know, so that's what I'm getting at. So I feel like you've had enough to, you've had enough to work within your life already in order to get to this point. And most people don't even have that, by the way. That's where the issues lie.
Yeah, and I'm very lucky that I mean I've always known what I wanted to do, and I'll say this, which I've been saying quite often to people, which is I now personally I think we all know I'll start with this, and that is, you know, when I used to do the speaking events, I would say, look, I can't, in a room of 50 people. I can't tell anyone here how to be happy.
Right.
It's too complex. I don't know you. I can't tell you how to be happy. But I can give you a 100% surefire way to be miserable. And that is be something other than who you really are. Guaranteed recipe for misery.
Right.
And the reverse of that, obviously, if you reverse it, then happiness is self-actualization. On that note, a lot of, you know, you hear all the time, like, you know, life is about, you know, discovering who you are. It's about becoming who you, blah, blah, blah. I no longer agree with that. I personally think that we know who we are as children.
Mm. Mm.
I think we know exactly who we are. I think we know exactly what we want. And then I think we let society, parents, friends, all these things steer us away from our intrinsic nature, because it wants you to be what it wants you to be, not what you want to be. And it's putting all these barriers and walls in front of you. And like when I just kind of thought of myself as a kid, I was like, shit, I know who I was.
Right.
I know who I was then. You're your most authentic self. It's before life has, you know, hit you with a baseball bat in the face. So I really think if people thought about it enough, you know, what you liked as a kid is... You still like the same shit.
Yeah, you know,
it doesn't change. I mean, you find new things, and don't get me wrong,
we evolve and grow.
But by and large, you were your most authentic self. Yeah. You know,
and just think of all the things that we fight
before
ourselves.
Society got their claws in us.
Yep.
You know, like,
and when, we put them in the school, and it starts social conditioning, and it's that whole thing that I always talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but, we do a lot.
But kids are like in their most like. I mean, before they put all the rules, like you got to color in the lines, you got to do this, like. Just let them be.
It's like, it's funny off of that note, and I truly 100% believe in both of what you're saying, because like with you, like I've always known, and it's actually, we, you know, I've told you I'm about to start doing motivational speaking gigs myself on what you just said, because I've known who I was since from very little. And thank God, like, you know, my dad tried to skew me here and there, and I had that. That's where I have some of the whole success and all these things in my mind because of that side. But thank God for my mom, who just said, you know, you can do whatever you want to do. I will support whatever you want to do, and da, da, da. But my littlest one, what I'm getting at, she's like, Dad, she plays softball. She goes, she's nine. She goes, I want to be the first female baseball player. And I go, yeah, honey. I go, that's great. How are we going to get there? And so, and I'm more than happy to show you how to do it. Just make sure that's what you want, we're going to stick to the plan.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And I'm never going to deter you. I'm not going to say it's just for boys.
Yeah.
You know, go, I believe you can do it, and let's go for it.
Yeah.
So absolutely. I hear you on that. So,
yeah, I love that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, you're on point. You have your stuff together. You're very calm. I don't know what chaos we've gotten here to make you so calm today, Tyler.
That's why he likes
but
me.
But Jesus Christ.
I'm a ball of chaos.
You're calming me down. I'm sitting there going, I need some chaos right now. But you're like calming me down. So we're going to add some more chaos in your life right now, but throwing in the air episode
chaos
right now. Right? Hey, you know what? You already got me earlier today. Ooh, all right. So Jedi. Guys, we have Tyler Gray on our show today, and thank you so much for being here. This guy's amazing right now, former Ranger and now acting and doing his thing. So he's just actually complicated his life by making it more chaotic with fun and excitement and entertainment. So thank you for entertaining the world with what you do.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, so here's our topic episode today. It's called Fight or Flight. When do you know if you should fight for something or decide it's time to move on and let it go? And I'm not just talking about just relationships in general, you know, because there's always something that we want so bad, and it's just sometimes just like, it's that we just didn't reach the end, and we can't, it's just not meant to be.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll speak from my experience. I think I would argue that I don't know, because you just, if you really knew, you know, you would theoretically do it. But
right.
I feel like there's just this fear of making the wrong decision, and you know, especially if someone is stubborn and not a, you know, doesn't quit things easily. Like, you know, I'll spend years trying to fix something that's fundamentally broken, but I just won't give up on it.
This relationships as well, same?
Oh, yeah, I've done it in I would say every relationship I've ever been in.
Okay.
I definitely should have ended it, you know, well before it ended, because it just, you know, it goes off the rails, and for some reason, you know, I always seem to think that I'm always trying to get it back to the great thing it was in the beginning, you know, I also have this sense of loyalty where if you know, someone was really, you know, good to me in the beginning, and I just feel this like debt, you know, to where when things start to go bad, it's like, well, that'd be really shitty of me to
like abandon them.
Yeah, like, yeah. I owe them going through this rough time, or you know, it's just they're having issues with whatever, and I mean, I've probably spent, let's see, in one relationship, probably easily 4 years, too long. I mean, it should have never happened to begin with.
Four years?
That's a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, shit. How long was the relationship?
Let's see. Six.
6 years.
Yeah. And I mean, again, it should have never happened, but definitely should have ended after the first 2 years. No question.
Someone should have taken your draft options off the board then, mister.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, you know, and that was my fault.
Okay.
100%. And, next relationship was 10 years, and I probably, let's see, how many years in? Would be three years. So
out of 10.
Yeah.
Okay.
You should have called it quits after three.
Yeah. No. Called it quits
damn,
after
you're
three.
Staying a lot longer. Yeah.
But now, what is the other half? What are they doing while this is happening in your mind? How is the other half reacting? Are they in it with you at this point? Are you guys trying to figure it out? Or they sometimes just don't have a clue and you're just kind of, you know, you should be getting out, but they still maybe feel the same, or they know they should be out of this as well?
I would say it depends.
Okay.
You know, and then the third one I was going to say is it was 5 years and it should have ended after probably three.
Okay.
You know, and I'd say at least with that one, I think probably in hindsight, I think she would agree that it should have ended. And I think she probably felt the same. She just, you know, both being stubborn, the one before that, I'd say the same.
Okay.
And then the one before that, that was definitely, that was all me.
Okay.
And she had no real, you know, she thought everything was fine.
That's what I wanted to know.
Yeah, yeah. That was my just last, and I was obviously much younger and much more unaware. But yeah, I definitely should have. I didn't communicate that, you know, I was unhappy and more than even unhappy, I didn't even want to be in a relationship in general at the time. So that was definitely my fault. You know, it's just one of those things where you do, I think the best way to say it would be, you know, like my parents were codependent 100%. Mm-hmm. Dad is an alcoholic. And, you know, my mom and dad were crazy codependent. So not shockingly, I took those traits to every relationship I was in. And I also chose codependent people.
Define for you, what is codependent? I feel like that shows up for other people in different ways. Right.
Yeah. For me, codependent is, you know, you're essentially trying to fix the other person. Mm. You're trying to change them. You're trying to help them, you know, like, you know, my mom always tried to get my dad to quit drinking. Never happened because he's not going to do it for anyone but himself. And so I would get into relationships with people that I, in hindsight, could tell were fundamentally broken, and so was I.
Right.
You know, so I would choose that, and then, you know, I would, you know, when you're, if you're in a relationship and they're unhappy and it makes you unhappy, that's codependency.
Yeah.
Because their mood, their happiness shouldn't affect yours at all.
Right. I always say I'm not responsible for your happiness.
And I've tried, you know, in the last two relationships, I tried so hard to make them happy. And it doesn't work. And not only does it not work, but the more that you try and make someone else happy, A, it fails because you can't, and then you're not responsible for that. And then B, on top of that, it builds all this resentment that you have towards them because they didn't ask you to try and make them happy. You're doing it. They're not happy, and you're giving and giving and giving, and you're not receiving anything back, and they're not, you know, happy. And so you resent them for that, even though it's your fault.
Right.
You know, in a codependent relationship, it happens the exact same way on the opposite. So, I had to learn that, you know, you need to be selfish, focus on your own happiness and focus on, you know, you're the main priority, and, you can't make someone else happy. You can't make them, you can't make someone love you, you know, all these different things. And, you know, it only took me, you know, like 45 years to learn that.
Right.
That's all.
I feel good. I feel good. I feel like I've moved quickly.
Yeah. You've grown.
Yeah.
The hard part is like when you know the signs are coming and you just can't, like you said, in your case, you just want to help out or you want to make sure you don't leave them or abandon them and things like that. And you're just kind of you see it coming, but you're just, now you're kind of like, that guilt sets in or whatever it is. Yeah. Whatever it is takes over.
I think we know within the first few months.
Right.
But what happens is we rationalize and we make excuses.
Yeah.
Oh, it's just this or that. But then looking back, I feel like we can identify, okay, I did ignore that red flag, right. or yeah. I did ignore this.
Well, we should hope so, because if you get back into something, you know, we start off by thinking that because, you know, we're all stronger, we're all getting into something for the most part, you know, we've learned our lesson.
Right.
It's not going to happen again, da, da, da. And then you get the next one, you're like, fuck. You know, like you said, it's here it goes again, you know, but you start to catch those signs a little bit sooner. But once again, you just can't get out. And it's that thing with the marriage a lot of the time, why communication is so key, because when someone voices an opinion of saying like, I don't want to be here anymore, or I just don't like you, or you just don't make me happy. And it's like, well, let me try to fix this, this, and this, and make let me see if this will work.
Yeah, I don't know if that's really communication. It's more so comprehension. So I think we can communicate all day long, but if we can't comprehend what the other person is trying to convey, mm-hmm. you're not going to win, no matter right. how great your communication is. It's being able to actually comprehend and understand the needs of your partner.
Right. And still in both sides, it's still a cop-out, though, because if someone said that to you, like, you know, yeah. Jamie, you're just not fulfilling my needs, da-da-da, and yet they still stay, while you're going through your old, like you said, your own stuff, and I'm going through mine now, we're codependent on each
right.
other. It's like, well,
that's
the person who said that
should
have fucking got out in the first place, too.
Yeah.
So you're right, it's a lot of codependency, and that's a different way of looking at it, and because there are different many ways of codependency.
Absolutely, and, you know, I read a book, Codependent No More, which is like the Bible of codependency, for lack of a better term, and it's, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great book, and a lot of things applied to me when I read it. And you know, the other thing is that I think there's, with codependency, I personally think there's another core issue, which is fundamentally, you know, for me, I'll say that as a child growing up, like I was alone
mm-hmm.
a lot. I had imaginary friends, you know, I was alone quite often. And I hated it.
Okay.
It drove me crazy. And, you know, I took that into adulthood of not wanting to be alone. And so, you know, when you're in a relationship and it's going bad, is it worse than being lonely?
Right.
Usually, I mean, it's probably not, but, you know, you have this fear of loneliness and you feel like you need, you know, you need someone because... you know, when you're by yourself, that's when you're by yourself, that's when you actually have to listen to your own
and
head.
And sit with it and learn from that stuff. I agree with that.
Well, no, I mean on a negative side.
Oh, gotcha.
Like when you're alone,
right.
That's when, you know, like my mind, if I'm alone and, you know, like my head will just start spinning on you know negative things. So I you know, for a lot of my life I was generally just trying to distract my thoughts because they'll run nonstop. You know, going to sleep, it'll just freaking, you know, and it's kind of a mental torture in a way. So you know, I would stay in relationships because it was a distraction and it was someone to calm, you know, again, right. like if they're chaos, then they'll calm, you know, me. And again, obviously that's not fair or good to be in a relationship. And I didn't realize it at the time, but now, it's obvious to me that, you know, the fear of being alone and the fear of, you know, being alone with my thoughts and, mm-hmm. you know, just not having interaction was a major reason why I stayed much longer than I should have.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're still in that space?
No, I mean, I think after this last relationship I was in, I definitely realized a lot of things. I read a lot of books, you know, that codependency one being one of them. And
I found it. I looked it up, actually.
Yeah, it's a great, great book. And, but I mean, there's a bunch of things I read. And I really, and actually, I shouldn't say just that I read. You know, I went to a 60-day, you know, a therapy place, and inpatient or, you know, not inpatient, but resident, you
right.
know, treatment. And, this was a year, year and a couple months ago, I forget. Okay. But I spent 60 days doing, you know, work on myself every
right.
day,
That's
therapy
right.
every day. And that was an absolutely life-changing.
Was this the breakup that took you to that point that I just need to go and just start working on me?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And for that, you know, getting me to that place, you know,
right.
I'm glad it happened.
Okay.
Because, and again, I'll obviously still have a lot of growing to do, a lot of learning and all these things, but now I definitely see the, you know, the toxic traits that I had that, you know, there's a million things in every relationship I've ever been in that are absolutely my fault. No
okay.
question. No
okay.
question. And so now it's about, all right, I can't control the other person, but I'm not going to make these same mistakes
again.
Yeah,
be accountable for those mistakes as well.
Yeah.
So I want to know about the flip side to all this, you know, like with the younger generation as well. Amber, what's up, girl? We got a new intern producer behind
yeah.
the helm right there right
what's
now.
What's up to our new intern?
Our new intern called me sir today. I go, whoa, first of all, don't ever call me sir.
She didn't call me ma'am.
That's what I wanted to call you ma'am. But Amber, how old are you, if I may ask?
I'm 23.
All right, so here's what I want to do, the flip side on this, because I feel like the younger generation is more used to being by themselves, and because of technology and social media and all these things like that. Amber, would you agree with that, or do you still, I know you're social, but are you looking to get, you know, no one's looking to get serious or like to really lock it down at the younger generation anymore. What do you think about that?
So the funny thing is I'm dating right now.
Okay,
so
how's that going for you?
It's going good so far. A lot of our, like, ups and downs is basically the same thing as Tyler has been saying.
Mm-hmm.
Is like he was a veteran before, mm-hmm. and since he was in the battlefield, and since he is now back in reality, he can't process it as well.
Right.
So
wow.
normally he's home a lot and he plays video games to basically balance out like his form of chaos.
To disconnect.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Is it a form of or a way for him to disconnect?
Yes. It's like yes and no. So basically he uses video games to relax himself because
okay.
that's the only way that he can relax since he doesn't like to like hang out with a lot of people because of his situation. Have you guys seen like Black Hawk Down?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So basically he did that.
Okay.
So
wow.
that was his job.
Right.
And all of that. So he yeah. basically uses video games to just escape reality, or when we're both having like our bad days, he uses video games to give me space.
Okay. So that's relatable then. Like,
and then are you guys more along the lines of open relationship or fully committed?
Fully committed.
Okay. I love that because I think that's a common thing too
yeah.
now with the younger generation
okay. See,
they have the open relationship.
This is what I want to know, right, with the open relationship. And once again, I know like even for our other producer, Travis, who always talks about, he just landed his girlfriend, but it's just that thing where I feel like
I can't wait to fucking meet her. Look at Travis over there. So handsome.
You know, and you probably with your field of work and everything as well, I feel like the younger generation is still like they hang out more in groups. I mean, we all did as a younger generation, but I feel like they're not in that much of a hurry to get tied down. They're not in a hurry to get married. You know, they're using that time to just be, and it's,
yeah,
you know, it's changed a lot.
Don't you want to run around and be single? Are you more comfortable in a relationship?
I really am.
Yeah.
I'm working on this, but you know, I go crazy when I'm single.
Mm.
Like I'm not a healthy person when I'm single. I'll be perfectly honest.
See,
with
and he
you.
Owns up to that, which is great.
Yeah.
Though.
I go crazy.
Yeah.
I just.
And that's okay. I mean, I think that's totally fine because once again, it's not that you're you know, solely monogamous. You just know yourself well
yeah.
enough to know that you're better at being with someone. And that's probably why work is so good for you right now too. And you handling all the different hats in the work in your career because it's keeping you so busy right now. You know, that it's squashing all that extra noise in your life.
Yeah, well, and something I'll say, too, that I learned when I was in the therapy, which I never thought I would say, but, you know, I basically realized that I'm a sex addict.
Mm.
You know, I didn't even know
right.
what exactly that meant. I thought it meant something very different than it does. And then when I was reading what it is, I was like, oh, shit, yeah, yep, you know, and
So that diagnosis is correct.
Yeah, no, I definitely, you know, I have an addictive personality in general. You know, I'm addicted to adrenaline. I'm, you know, addicted to all these different things. And again, I think the core of addiction is self-destruction. Mm-hmm. So is it really shocking that so many warriors have addictive issues? I don't think so, because that's a side effect of self-destruction. And also, self-destruction is interesting because how do I justify self-destruction? Well, I justify it because you don't get better by being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we grow when, like, the further I take, the lower I take myself,
mm-hmm.
the more I learn about myself and the more I grow.
Okay.
So I justify self-destruction as self-improvement.
Mm.
Interesting.
That's interesting. Yeah, that's I always say if you're seeking growth, you better get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Yeah,
exactly.
Because right. that's what it fucking requires to level up.
Yep. Yeah. And now I am so comfortable with discomfort that if I'm comfortable,
what's next?
It doesn't. It makes me feel.
Then
weird
what
and
are you
it.
Doing next?
Exactly. I'm wasting my time and you know, so the sex addiction part though is. Really, you know, when I'm single, I just fucking go bananas.
Yeah.
Like, and again, I fully admit, like, I do not do well being single. So, and a weird thing is, you know, I was in two open relationships and I didn't like it, which right. is weird because you'd think I would, but I'm just not wired for it.
Mm.
So I prefer, you know, to be in a monogamous relationship and you know, I just want to, I want the Bonnie to my Clyde.
Oh, I like that.
You know,
yeah.
I want a ride or die who's just down for anything. And you know, I want a life partner, you know, someone to do life with as a team. And that just kind of like, you know, again, is that healthy wanting to be in, you know, like I'm better in a relationship, you know, I don't know, probably not. I probably need to figure out some, you know.
No, I feel like I operate at a higher level when I'm in a committed relationship.
Yeah, see, I
this
I
coming
feel,
from the girl who breaks up before Christmas.
I'm just kidding. I do.
Let's discuss that, Jamie. No, yeah, I'm kidding. That's another episode.
Let's not dive into that. Shit, Christmas sorry, is right around the corner.
It's
fuck, I'm doomed.
It's economics. It's economics.
That's right.
Yeah.
See, we're looking at a new life. Thank you, Tyler. It's economics.
They're identifying
it's very
my
economical.
Fucking, my patterns.
It's all about money. No,
shit.
But woo! I agree with you. I'm the same way. I definitely
makes me fucking feel uncomfortable.
I do better in a relationship.
Okay.
For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah.
So do I.
I do too. And we've talked about this. Like the open mm-hmm. thing, I'm with you on that. I'm just not wired for it. I mean
You're a whore though.
Well, but that's the interesting
you're
thing. Like I'm a man whore. I'll fully admit that. And I've been really shitty to a lot of girls. I've been hurt and I've hurt a lot of people because I was immature and I didn't, you know. At this point I've reached out to almost every single girl and apologized and because I understand what I was doing now. But and you know whether they needed it or not, you know, I really felt the need to say it. But but you'd think in man whore world,
can I dive into this world?
Yeah, but you would think that like an open relationship would be like,
right?
Oh, yeah. This is awesome.
Yeah.
And I just both times I've tried to like do it, and both times I don't like it.
It doesn't align with you.
Yeah, it just doesn't work. But again, you'd think it would. And I know a couple that are in an open relationship. They've been in one for 7 years and it works for them.
So when you say you're a sex addict, do you just want to have a lot of sex with the same person then? Or do you crave something different? Do you cheat? Like what?
No.
Define your... Like, what is your definition of a sex addict?
It's different for everyone, obviously, but like for me, I really need that like it's not it's so fundamental to like my needs. Like I have to, and it's not even like necessarily sex every single day. It's just it's one of those things where I am addicted to like being sexual with someone. And, and you know, if, you know, it goes along with like porn addiction, you know, like I looked at Playboy magazines when I was fucking 7 years old, you know? And actually the way I found out that I was a sex addict is because I figured out through reading the stuff, I was like, all these qualities match my dad. You know, and then I kind of was like, oh shit, it matches me too, you know, right. Like, and so I think it's, I don't want to say hereditary, but it's
maybe a predisposition.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, he's an alcoholic, so he has the same addictive traits, but you know, he's absolutely a sex addict. And I don't want to talk any more about how I know that, but but it's one of those things where, you know, I just, like when I was younger, I was all about the chase.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was all about the chase. And as soon as the chase was over, next.
Yeah.
And again, that's not good for people. But I couldn't control it. And each time I would tell myself, no, I really like this girl. Like I was subconsciously manipulating myself
right.
to get
stay her. On that path and yeah, keep moving yeah, forward.
To get her. And then once I got her, I didn't want her anymore. And it was, and I hated myself for it. And each time I would think, oh, I'm not doing it this way. And then for a while I wouldn't date anyone. I wouldn't, you know, because I didn't want to hurt them.
Yeah.
How did you get out of that space?
I think partly just getting older, you know.
More mature.
Yeah, like in my 20s, I was such a shithead. Even in my early 30s. but I think as I got older, it just kind of, you know, the impulse as a guy when you're younger, it's like, fucking do
it. It's like everything.
Yeah, it's such a relentless drive. And then I finally, you know, kind of,
it's like it balances out, like it almost plateaus and you just kind of just go, all right. Cause you've been, like you said, you've been through it enough to finally, like anything, you've been through enough to go, all right, I know where I'm at now. I know how I need to be and da, da, da. Hopefully, you know,
I love when you go da, da, da.
That's me da, skipping da, da. Over a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing too, is I think that you, you know, like as you get older too, like now it's like, you know, even when, you know, being single now, it's like, you know, you see a girl or a girl even shows interest and you just kind of do the math of time and effort and you're like, nah.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, could I? Yeah. Right. Do I really want to at this point?
See, that's the stuff that kept me at bay at a young age, though, Tyler, right there. The chase has always been there. Like, I love the chases. I love the shit out of women now. And it's just like, you know, the funny thing about it is that I know I've been through it so much to know where I look down that path that you're saying. It's like, no, it's not even worth going there because, A, I don't want to be in that situation the next day where she feels like I'm an asshole or vice versa or anything like that. I can cut it off because the thrill of the chase is the lead up. And then I'm happy at that point and go, yeah, I don't see us together tomorrow. I don't see us together in a year from now. So I'm going to stop this before it gets bad.
Absolutely the same.
I got really good at that. So, and no Christmas.
Ever. Shut the hell up.
No Christmas. All right. So guys, we have Tyler Gray on the show. We are going to ask you the question today, Mr. Man. You get the question. You've been a great guest and we're going to dive right into this one. All right. So I'm going to choose one of these things.
How many do we have today?
We have a few.
Okay.
Oh, this will be a good one. At what point is it acceptable to send a nude pic? They ask for them right away. And most of the time I'm uncomfortable. So I say no. Now I kind of want to, but I don't want to come off as easy or like a slut. Wow. She went right there for it. So, at what point is acceptable to send a nude pic?
I mean, that's a good question. I would say it varies.
Yeah, right.
It definitely varies. I would also say it varies between if you're, you know, a guy or a girl. You know, like I think it's hilarious to me that dudes, you know, meet a chick one or two times and then send dick pics. That's such a fundamental misunderstanding of right. women. It's kind of hilarious.
But just wait till you hear the real answer some girls on how they reacted to that. That's even more laughable.
Yeah, it's crazy. But like, you know, nude pictures, I'd say once a doesn't necessarily the relationship doesn't necessarily need to have turned physical in person, mm-hmm. but once there's, you know, a sexual dialogue, you know, and it's heading that way, I think at that point it's acceptable. Once yeah. it's within the sexual realm, then I think it's acceptable. But until it gets there, I think it's like it's out of context.
Yeah, that's know? A great answer. I agree with that. Mm. What do you say on that one, Jamie?
I don't think it's ever fucking acceptable to send me a fucking dick pic unless I ask.
And that's the acceptable part.
I feel like if I want it, I'll come fucking see it and take it.
That's, I'll take that any day.
Okay, yeah, sorry. Let me be very specific. Just so, yeah, let me be very specific. I was answering that in reference to,
yes,
to
yes.
a girl.
That's no, correct.
Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah. I was, yes. you know, a girl. For a guy... yeah, like I've never sent an unsolicited, you know, any picture.
Right. If your girlfriend was like, "Hey, baby, send me your," like, you know, would you send it?
Oh, I'd send. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've sent dick pics, but it was because it was requested.
Right.
I mean, I think I've sent unsolicited dick pics to my girlfriend. I mean, because she's, you know,
you're like,
we're at that point in our lives. You
yeah.
know?
So, yeah. So I'm like,
you're right. Thank you. And that's yeah. acceptable, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah. And I'm sure I've done it for a joke, you know, right. at some point. You know, take a picture of the, you know, the key and send it to me where it's at.
Yeah.
And, you know, you got the key and then in the deep background, like, you know, yep, there's a dick
pic. That's hilarious.
Yeah, it's you know, use it for fun. But
I'd be like, baby.
Yeah, it's no different than what we want the girl to come to the door with that trench coat on,
oh, yeah,
nothing
yeah.
else on. No, I mean, it's all in good taste and fun. Yeah. yeah. So
yeah, I don't send photos.
We don't have to. You're in lingerie all day long. I mean, what's like? I'm just saying. It's yeah. like, you know. It's like, obviously, it's just the imagination is already at that.
Just Google
point.
Me.
Well, you know what though, that actually does bring up a very good point, and that is, you know, now in the digital age, you know, to further answer her question mm-hmm. is, if you're going to send a nude photo. You know, hey, not all relationships last forever. And just know that whatever you send digitally will last forever
yeah.
and can get posted anywhere.
And this that's is a good why point. I've never sent a nude fucking photo.
Well, but see, but that's so shitty, though. I mean, it's
you not know, because I'm like, baby, if you want to see me naked,
right.
I meant
shitty in the fact that, not that you do
oh,
that, just shitty in the
yeah,
fact that someone
a,
might actually take
thing.
Revenge or something weird yeah. out there. Yeah. That's shitty.
Especially like with you and like your industry too,
yeah.
like
yeah.
blackmail, all these things. Yeah. So I just don't engage and I don't send them. So
that makes a lot of sense.
But and on that note, for the girl asking the question, once you get to that point, if you want to send a nude photo, mm-hmm. don't put your face in it.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
You know,
yeah.
It's a lot harder. You know, if you want to see me naked, you see my face in every fucking picture. If you yeah. want to see me naked, just don't take a
picture
of your
face. See, that doesn't even work for me because my body is so online
right.
already. Like
right.
there's things that I can't remove.
Okay.
So. I mean, I guess you could like take out my dermals, my piercings, but
right. I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
yeah.
So
okay. And by the way, Miss Thing, Miss Slat
yeah.
over here. Don't
Send
ever think
nudes.
That you're if you're ever gonna feel like you're easier coming off of a slut, that means you're feeling peer pressure, first of all. And don't ever feel that way, okay? So if you wanna send something, there's no time frame, there's no time limit, and don't ever feel like you're under time pressure to send someone a photo of yourself.
And
nude.
Sometimes like even lingerie, that's hotter
yeah,
too.
Think,
like
I
you don't
think
need
that's
to
so
be
much
putting
better.
Your pussy on blast, girl.
Yeah. yeah. Well, and look, I'll say this as a self-admitted man whore. I think the pressure on women to the concept of, you know, oh, I don't want to appear slutty.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I do.
We're like human beings are fucking sexual, fucking dirty animals.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Every fucking, you know, people that say, oh, I don't, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. You know, they're the ones who choke me till I pass out.
Right.
You know, everyone acts like they're like this. And then when you get them in the moment, it's like fucking punch me in the face. Yeah. You know?
But that goes back to the true authentic self again. Just like own up to what you're doing.
And that's what I'm saying. The thing. Like feeling like you're a slut, that's society fucking putting on you.
Yeah.
Don't I agree.
Get rid of that. Everyone's a slut. Everyone's a whore.
Right.
Like, that's...
And you own it, for God's sake. If you want to be a, like...
Where was this conversation an hour ago?
Yeah, well, no, I mean, but it's one of those things. Like, think about it. We literally, if you think of what nature has programmed us for, and this is unarguable.
Yes.
Number one, we are programmed to survive. That's the most fundamental. Mm-hmm. Survive.
Yep.
Number two, fuck.
Yeah.
I don't care who you are. Everyone is programmed to fuck. And then three, take care of the fuck product.
It's a connection.
Yeah. Well, the child,
right.
You know,
right.
You
yes.
take
yes.
care of that child. Okay. And then, you know what I mean? Like, but that's what we're programmed to do. No one can argue with that. So it's like, why are we going against our fundamental nature?
We know why, because it's all programming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
And what society places on us. So.
Yes, absolutely.
To control.
Well, no more. Yeah. No more people.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for hanging out with us today. I feel like we need to have you back because there's just so much to dive into with you. We didn't even talk about your hat. Let's talk about them really quick at least plug them. When I met Tyler, he gave me this hat, and I was like, wow, this is really cool. So tell us a little bit about that really quick.
So it was actually a former teammate of mine started a company called Eagles and Angels, and he takes... or we donate, and there's, I don't even know, over 100 people now that have done it, where we donate our uniforms from when we were in, and then he takes them and cuts them up and makes, you know, that's part of my uniform.
Sid, can you grab that hat for us?
That's part of my uniform. That's the camo behind the flag. Yeah.
That's amazing.
And he makes wallets and other stuff. And so it's actually
my worn uniform. His fatigues, right?
That's great.
From when he served, and then it has his name in here.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Yeah. And so that's the Eagle collection the company's called Eagles and Angels. And then I forget what percentage. So I donate the uniform.
It's really cool.
And then I choose a veteran nonprofit and he donates a percentage. It's a percentage as him and I always joke, it's like, you know, cost him money to do it. So he's got to make something out of it. But he donates a percentage of the profits to the nonprofit that I choose for my, you know, for my hat.
What a great cause.
And there's a bunch of cool stories from, like I said, over 100 veterans that have done that series.
Okay.
So it's awesome.
That's amazing. I love that too.
What do you have to plug today, sir?
You know what? I'm plugless. I'm going to go plugless today. I
love it.
Yeah, I'm plugless today.
Just wireless? Check him out.
Gonna go wireless.
Right. So, all right, guys, we have Tyler Gray on our show. And once again, Tyler, please let them know where they can find you on. And first, tell the show SEAL Team, guys. Check it out.
Mm-hmm.
What station is that on one more time, please?
So it's on CBS
originally,
and now it's moved over to Paramount Plus, which is Paramount's platform. So on Paramount Plus, you can get every episode. But social media. So you can find me Tyler A. Gray with an E on Instagram.
All right.
That's
great.
I love it.
Yeah. Jamie?
All right. Jamie_Villamore. You guys know where to find me. And
all right. When anything at Dating Intelligence and me, my personal at Fetch Sport. And guys, this has been a great day. It's Dicky Postillos. Tyler, thanks once again. Jamie,
and thank
great
you
show.
To our new producer over there. Woohoo!
Thanks, Amber, for some of your feedback.
Thanks for chiming in. Yes,
please.
Love it.
All right, guys. It's another episode, and we will see you soon.